This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. You're listening here on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatu. Lots happening on this week's show. We've got a real mixed bag of property news, and some of it quite light, some of it a bit heavier. And we're just going to go through a number of things and have some fun along the way. There is probably even time for our bad landlord, bad tenant section, which never ceases to amaze with some of the hair-raising stories that we get with regards to how people treat each other. But before we do that, we'll look a little bit at the market, the sales market, and then go from there. So we'll just fit whatever we can into this half-hour time slot. Lovely having your company. I'll tend to do a little bit of a roundup of some headlines, property related. The first one from Esther Taunton on stuff.co.nz says, falling interest rates and increased activity signal a brighter spring for the housing market. So what's going to happen? Probably no surprise to many people that the housing market is going to start heading up, according to this article in general. It says the housing market is already responding to the first official cash rate in 4 years. A cash rate cut, I should say, with expert predictions of a more buoyant spring and summer. In the 2 weeks after the OCR announcement, falling mortgage rates sparked a flurry of activity from previously dormant buyers. Peter Thompson, the managing director of real estate company Barfoot & Thompson, said Auckland's property market showed positive signs in August. The market is stirring and there's every reason to believe more challenging times are behind us. During the month, Barfoot & Thompson sold 889 properties across the city, the highest number of August sales since 2021, and had 1,454 new listings, the highest for an August since 2017. And meanwhile, the median sales price was $952,500, marginally lower than July's median and 3.1% lower than the same month last year. Now, Auckland, as I've said on this show sometimes before, is a barometer, an early barometer of what might happen with the real estate market in the rest of the country. Generally, the larger centres start to see activity first, and then that moves on to the smaller centres from there. So Peter Thompson says, we're coming into a new season in a market where vendors and buyers have reached a consensus that the market is stabilising price-wise, and the more mortgage interest rates ease back, the more active the market will become. So the increased activity isn't just limited to Auckland, and Sarah Wood, the chief executive of property website realestate.co.nz, said buyers had been performing more searches and saving more properties post the OCR cut. She says Kiwis have a love affair with property, and while economic factors can sometimes dampen that enthusiasm, it never truly fades. We've heard that people have been waiting in the wings, and our data supports that. Stock levels in August dipped below 30,000 homes for the first time in 6 months, and more properties are being listed for less than a month, which is up 11.6%. In other words, properties are selling more quickly. And while there's still plenty of stock available to keep the market steady for now, these could be early signs of a shift ahead. Meanwhile, the national average asking price was stable around the mid-$800,000 mark. Those selling can capitalise on increased buyer interest, while those looking to buy still have plenty of choice. Both buyers and sellers can benefit from the relative stability in prices. CoreLogic chief property economist Kelvin Davidson said there were positive signs for would-be buyers, with property values losing momentum, first home buyers maintaining near record market share, and mortgage rates expected to continue to fall. He says inflation is now trending back down to the 1% to 3% target band, and as things stand, there seems to be a reasonable chance that typical mortgage rates could drop to around 5.5% by the end of 2025. Undoubtedly, the major turning point for mortgage rates is here, and that will be a support for housing. But a fresh boom doesn't seem likely when the jobs are being lost and the economy remains in recession. Property values had lost their momentum, Davidson added, with Wellington now down 21% from the peak. The smallest decline in value had been in Christchurch, down 7.1%, where first home buyers made up 28% of the purchases. So looking ahead, it wouldn't be a surprise to see first home buyers maintain a solid presence in the market for at least the rest of 2024. He says, after all, they always tend to find a way and have quite a few things in their favour at present, such as access to KiwiSaver for at least part of the deposit and a stronghold on the low deposit lending allowances at the banks. However, the gap between mortgage rates and rental incomes has closed, reducing the cash top-up for a typical property. Mum and dad investors could become more active, and that's something that we will see in this region without a doubt. As was mentioned in this article, the market's not going to shoot off, but it's certainly going to rise. So as for those wanting to move house, their lack of activity in recent years suggested there was probably some pent-up demand among that group too, Davidson said. Provided that more owner-occupiers can start to sell their current house a little more quickly, activity in terms of movers shifting onto that next property could be a little stronger over the next 12 to 18 months. So various different people commenting there around the market, and interesting to see that they all see that going upwards in a somewhat positive fashion. Now, without meaning to sound like I'm contradicting it, this headline at first thought does sound a little bit like it's being contradicted. This from Susan Edmonds of Radio New Zealand. Median house value falls $30,000 from February. She says, forget a soft patch. New Zealand's property market has been going through a second downturn, CoreLogic says, and the median property value has dropped $30,000 since the most recent price peak. Property research firm has released its data for August, which shows values slipped nationally by 0.5% in the month. And that's a sixth monthly fall in prices in a row. So prices are now down 3.7% from their most recent peak in February of this year, and down 16.8% from the peak recorded after the pandemic in January 2022. And they go around different areas to talk about the different amounts those have gone down. So the drop was driven by the still high mortgage rates, pressure on the labour market, and the number of listings available for buyers to choose from, he said. Kelvin Davidson, said prices were still slightly above their lowest post-COVID boom point, but the growth of 5 or 6% recorded in prices over the last few months of the year and the beginning of this year has basically fully reversed. He did say, though, that the drivers in the market are likely to be balanced from here. Going back to some of those comments from the last article, that, in fact, things will start going up. So it's just that effect of which leads a little bit of, I guess, anecdotal evidence that we are heading to the bottom of the market. If you were looking to buy, then it was probably is probably a good time. And in fact, Tony Alexander from OneRoof.co.nz says, "How long have buyers got before they lose the upper hand?" So people are definitely out looking at what is on offer. So this is an analysis piece from him. I'll just read it out verbatim and then possibly make a couple of comments along the way. He says, this is my first column of the month, which means I've had in hand the results from my survey of real estate agents around the country. The data shows us that the upward momentum in residential real estate, which was apparent even before the August 14th easing of monetary policy, has strengthened. Whereas 2 months ago, a net 35% of agents said they were seeing fewer people attending open homes. Now a net 42% say they're seeing more. The late July result was 11%. So people are definitely out looking at what is on offer, but are they buying? Well, we don't have the August sales data yet from the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand, but my latest survey, that's Tony Alexander saying that, my latest survey has shown that a net 12% of agents are seeing more people attending auctions, compared with a net 11% seeing fewer last month and 37% 2 months ago. It's a pretty big difference. So is the apparent extra buying causes prices to rise? Well, not yet. A net 7% of agents say the prices are falling in the area of operations. This is better than the net 29% seeing falls last month and the rather large 50% from 2 months ago. Is the lack of rising prices on average because investors are not buying? Well, no. A net 25% of agents say there are more investors in the market looking to make a purchase. 2 months ago, a net 24% said they're seeing fewer investors. So that's a big turnaround there as well. So if buyer demand is up, why might prices not yet be rising? That's because supply is increasing. A net 50% of agents have reported that they're receiving more requests for property appraisals. This is up from just 3% 2 months ago, and the strongest result since February's net 61%. More people are looking to sell now that they can see discussions about the falling interest rates causing the housing market to pick up. Some of these new appraisals may be from investors, a net 20% of agents say that they're seeing more investors looking to sell. That seems understandable when we consider the strong increases in the costs of running a rental business, council rates and insurance premiums in particular. I work quite often in Kapiti Coast, and the rates there have gone up in a huge way, affecting many landlords. So also worth noting that although more people are looking to buy, 48% of agents still say that these buyers are concerned about their employment. At the start of this year, only 14% of agents said buyers had income worries, and the 14% in this latest survey is not much lower than the recent peak of 56% seen in June. So that's some of the highlights from Tony Alexander's survey, monthly survey that he does. We'll just have a look in the rural sector as well. This article by Debbie Jameson on Stuff says winter farm sales subdued. So rural real estate sales have been subdued in the 3 months to July, and while there was a noticeable increase in lifestyle sales, the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand data for the 3 months to July revealed 228 farm sales, an increase from 217 in the previous quarter and 214 in the same period last year. In the year to July, 910 farms were sold, 193 less than the previous year. So things a little bit quieter there. It does go into a bit more detail around areas, but just the rural sector, it says that the activity around pastoral farming remained low on the back of very dry seasons in the top half of the South Island and low sheep meat prices. So even though the sales activity remained subdued over winter, there were some green shoots starting to appear in the market, and the recently announced increase of the Fonterra payout for the 24-25 season and a reduction in farm lending interest rates were giving buyers some renewed confidence. So again, we may see a little bit more activity happening there. So we'll just move on a little bit here and see where we're at. So Nardine Higgins on stuff.co.nz wrote an article saying ways to put your money to work on your mortgage. So I thought I'd just take a moment just to mention a couple of these. Just to put it in context, Nardine is a financial advisor at enable.me, and she says, if you're taking up the challenge to maintain financial discipline required by high interest rates when rates aren't so high, your next step could be to explore how to best apply the funds you manage to save to your mortgage. So there are four main options. You could keep the repayments at the previous level when you refix at a lower rate. You could save your money and then make lump sum repayments. Or you could utilise offset accounts or a revolving credit. So if you haven't had some thoughts about this, it might be the time, the next time that you're due to come off a fixed term, you could have a look at that. She says any progress on your mortgage is to be applauded, but right from the outset, she would suggest two options that are not my preference. If your income is at all lumpy or your circumstances have the potential to change suddenly, then voluntarily giving extra money to the bank, which you'd have them apply, you'd have to then apply to get back if you needed it, isn't the best strategy. Both the keeping your repayments higher and a lump sum repayment options have limits. For some banks, it's a maximum of 5% of the loan balance each year, while others it's a dollar figure, and some will charge you a break fee or early repayment fee for the pleasure. Obviously, if you keep the savings off to the side and those savings earn interest, but the folly of that should be fairly obvious. Bank deposit rates are always lower than the mortgage rates, and the margin is even wider after tax, so money could be used more efficiently. Which brings us to the next two options, offset accounts and revolving credit accounts. A revolving credit is like a great big overdraft on your mortgage where the debt is on a floating interest rate. You can put money into the revolving credit and take it out again at will, up to its limit, and you'll only be charged interest on the amount of the debt outstanding. That means if you channel all of your savings onto the revolving credit and save yourself interest, but as you can get it back again, you maintain control of those funds. This is similar to what you can do on credit cards, of course. So offset accounts are separate to your mortgage, but allow you to use the balance of those accounts to offset your mortgage balance, thus reducing the amount of debt you'll pay interest on. Again, you can put money into these accounts and take it back out when it suits you. Some banks allow you to link family members' savings accounts to offset your mortgage, which, if you can navigate the family politics, can be hugely beneficial. So a few tips there. The article does go on into more detail. That's on stuff.co.nz. Moving on a bit now, we'll probably have a look at some tenant-related matters. This article from early September says Kāinga Ora takes action over tenant rent arrears. So dozens of Kāinga Ora tenants have been taken to the Tenancy Tribunal over rent arrears in recent months. And advocates say they're part of a growing number facing housing-related debt. But the department says it is trying to get on top of the situation. In one case, a Wellington woman owed $34,440 in rent arrears, which she was told to pay off through an additional $60 a week on top of her rent. Just doing some maths there, that's going to take well over 10 years at $60 per week. In another situation, Auckland tenants were told to clear $18,021 in rent arrears via an extra $50 payment per week. In other cases, tenancies were terminated and tenants told to pay arrears immediately. Kāinga Ora General Manager of National Services, Nick Marling, said it tried to strike a careful balance around rental debt. Many of our customers live on very low incomes and have little or no money in reserve, which means even small, unexpected life events can push them into debt, and that can be difficult to recover from. When a customer falls behind on their rent, we contact them early and work closely with them to develop a plan that will support them as they work through rent-related issues. About three quarters of customers with rent debt are actively making payments to reduce their debt, so that's positive. When customers refuse to engage with us about their debt and continue not to pay their rent, we take action under the Residential Tenancies Act, and this has led to us terminating tenancies of 15 customers in the past financial year. Marling said reducing the level of customer rent debt was a priority for Kāinga Ora. We are reviewing our rent debt policy to prevent customers from building up large debts in future. I mean, that $30,000, that's quite incredible. Jake Lilly, a spokesperson for FinCap, a network of financial mentors, said debts to Kāinga Ora were common. We saw a jump in the median Kāinga Ora debt presenting to financial mentors in 2023. It went from $340.50 to $1,416 when compared to 2022. While there are several ways debts can arise, we did know of issues filling out paperwork meant some who were entitled to lower charges weren't getting them. There is a bit of classic debt-to-government issue, it being a debt that shouldn't really be created, which ends up being charged to someone who can't pay it without hardship. So the article goes on, but it's just the it does say towards the end this part. It says the government's decision to remove the sustaining tenancies framework, which was essentially a homeless prevention strategy, has already seen a ramping up of evictions of Kāinga Ora tenants. Instead of getting to the root cause of why people are in rent arrears, the cost of living is high and the incomes are not enough to keep up with these costs, the approach of this government has been to get more punitive. That's according to Vanessa Cole, Action Station spokesperson. Although in saying that, they do say earlier in the article that they've only evicted, I think, 14 groups of people. Remember also that eviction is absolutely the last straw. It's the extreme at the end of the scale, and there's plenty of things that tenants can do before that to put something in place with Kāinga Ora to put things right. It's an article here from the Bad Landlords, Bad Tenants section. It says, Rotorua landlord fined for charging above market rent on a cold, damp home. So a landlord has been fined more than $12,000 after charging above market rent on a cold, damp and unsafe house. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, MB, said it inspected a Rotorua property owned by Stephen Barner four times between November 2022 and April 2023 following complaints from multiple tenants. MB National Manager of Tenancy Compliance and Investigations, Brett Wilson, said Barner had rented the home to a couple expecting their first child. But he said the condition of the property led the couple to move out because they were reluctant to bring up their child there. During its initial inspection, MB had found the property to be in very poor state with a badly leaking roof, cracked and broken gutters, holes in the flooring and rotten timber in the window frames. That's incredible. The ministry said there was also no way of heating the home with a non-functioning heat pump, uncovered open fireplace, drafts, and no ground moisture barrier or drainage. How do people think they can get away with this? Wilson said Barner later claimed problems identified had been addressed, but he said Barner failed to produce requested information and further visits to the property confirmed this was not the case. Some people just should not be landlords. While under investigation, Barner rented to a mother and two children and increased the rent from $650 to $750 a week despite not fixing his serious issues. Wilson said the family were unable to use the front bedroom due to water dripping through the damaged ceiling, and at one point they wanted to sleep in the lounge. He said the condition of the property impacted young children's health, one of whom who had bronchitis. The Tenancy Tribunal found Barner committed several unlawful acts and breaches of the Residential Tenancies Act of 1986. He was ordered to pay over $12,000 in exemplary damages to the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment on behalf of the two tenancies affected. Just so you know, that money goes to the tenants. or at least that's my understanding. The Tribunal also found the $750 weekly rent exceeded the market rent by a substantial amount and issued a market rent order, reducing the rent at the property to $486 a week, backdated to the 2nd of November 2023. Now, in that case, he'll need to refund rent to the tenants. So in addition to paying the damages, Barna was required to reimburse the tenant all overpaid rent within 10 working days of the order, which equated to more than $8,700. He was also told to complete all necessary repairs to the property by 23rd of July 2024, but MB said these repairs had still not been completed. Wilson said the seriousness of the issues at the property and Barna's history of non-compliance meant it was in the public interest to take this case to the tribunal. As a result, Mr. Barna's failure to comply with his obligations as a landlord, his tenants, including young children, continue to live in cold, damp, unsafe property. He has incurred additional penalties, money he could have saved if he had taken the time and effort to maintain the property to an acceptable standard. He said Barna owned a number of rental properties and should be aware of his obligations. That's something that they're using more, is that bringing out damages against landlords, is if you own multiple properties, your knowledge should be higher. So Barna applied for a reversal of the tribunal's decision and appealed the decision to Rotorua District Court. MB said a stay of proceedings was granted for exemplary damages while proceedings were pending, but the work, market rent and rent reimbursement orders still must be complied with. It's just beggar's belief that people think they can get away with this sort of thing. What we find sometimes is people of different nationalities I'm not saying that Mr. Barna is from a different nationality, but in my experience, we sometimes see that in other countries, the relationship between landlords and tenants is very much weighted in favour of a landlord. In some countries, it's simply an agreement, doesn't have a law behind it to, I guess, overrule some of those things that are done. We're really lucky in New Zealand that we've got the Residential Tenancies Act, which outlines minimum standards, etc., on housing. I do wonder sometimes if owners come from other countries, own rental properties here, but apply what they are used to in terms of how they have the properties. For example, overseas, if Mr. Barna owned that home in certain countries, I won't mention, but he literally wouldn't have to do any of those things, fix anything up, because if people don't want to live there, they won't live there. And that's unfortunately sometimes that thought pattern is brought into this country. And that's why I feel that landlords really need to undergo compulsory education around the Residential Tenancies Act. Just very recently, a sad story here from September the 4th. Shilpi Arora writes on stuff.co.nz, Mount Wellington homicide, family alleges man was attacked while helping evict tenants. So an Auckland widow says her husband was fatally attacked while helping a friend evict unruly tenants. Her husband, Whenua Uga Lee Ayen Fatoia, excuse the pronunciation, of 40, was allegedly stabbed during an altercation at a townhouse in Auckland's Mount Wellington on Saturday. Widow Sarah Fatoia told the New Zealand Herald her husband was doing a favour for his friend, an Auckland property manager, by helping them remove unruly tenants. What might have seemed simple ended up backfiring, Sarah told the Herald. Sarah said Fatoia was the perfect person to ask to resolve a dispute, as he only ever used his words despite looking frightening. There was no intention for any violence. He was meant to just speak to them. He wanted to, I guess, in his own little way, bring some justice to try and help out. She alleged the tenants refused to move after being evicted. She said the property manager had been told by the police the case was a civil matter. So Sarah, in a comment on social media, said, I'm missing you so bad, my love. You're my soulmate forever. Rest in everlasting life, my beautiful man. You're incredibly loved by many. So it's really, really sad indeed. He had children as well, which makes it very sad also. You just got to be so careful. There will probably be more investigations into that. And certainly if you are a landlord and you are ever concerned about your safety or health when it comes to dealing with tenants, just get out of there. It seems like they tried to get police to help. Maybe in a way things didn't happen. We'll find out in the passage of time how that can resolve itself. So what learnings can come from that. So finally, this article from stuff.co.nz, it says how an infamous gang took over a building's lease by stealth. So the owner of an industrial building turned Comanchero headquarters tore down the gang signage and he wants to get the premises repainted for some new tenants. It's the end of a three-year journey for the owner who initially rented the two-storey apartment in Thacker's Quay, Christchurch to a man wanting to use it for his business. The man turned out to be a member of the Rebels MC gang and the building was converted into the South Island's chapter's headquarters. By the time the owner discovered what had happened, it was too late. But the Rebels wasn't the only underworld group to occupy the property. In July last year, the Comanchero gang patched over most of the South Island Rebels chapter and moved in. This is scary if you're owner of a commercial property. Owner told Stuff he never had any major issues with either gang, both of which always paid their rent on time. However, that all changed last week when the entire South Island Comanchero chapter, five patch members and 10 nominees, were arrested as part of a major police operation dubbed Operation Avon. The police said the investigation has allegedly exposed a gang supply of millions of dollars worth of Class A drugs into Christchurch. Following the arrest, the Comanchero's signage was stripped from the exterior of the building, and the owner, who Stuff has agreed not to name, said he and some friends were responsible. As well as exterior sign, they also stripped the internal walls of items, including the gang's commandments and a large canvas about 6 metres by 6 metres, emblazoned with the Comanchero's emblem last week. I just wanted it down as soon as possible. They were paying their lease and doing everything they should have been prior to that. Now they're in breach of their lease and they haven't been able to make the rent payment, so I can move on getting another tenant. So the owner was now faced with the problem of what to do with the property. I'd like to get someone in there and just clean the whole lot out. It's all clean and tidy and everything about it is good, but it's just their own personal gear I've no right to biff out, he says. I need to get it empty so I can get contractors in there to paint the inside and outside and get it re-ready to re-rent to somebody. So incredible that someone can sign a lease and then a gang move in. It's one of the scary things that can happen both in residential property and commercial as well. That's where it can be a real nightmare when that can happen. So do your background checks as best you can and as fully as you can when leasing, commercial or otherwise. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it can be very scary indeed should something like that happen. So resolved one way or the other there by the police and moving those on and getting that commercial premises back. So that's all we've got time for this week on Property Matters. I'm your host, Greg Watson. It's been wonderful. Thank you to the team at NPR, Manawatū People's Radio. You can find this show and many others on npr.nz, on the website there. Also, you can find this show by looking at your favourite podcasts and typing in the words Greg Watson and Property Matters. And that way you can get a show delivered to your device every week. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.